Blog Talk Radio.
Show, and I am Sandy Rogers. I get to serve as your hostess tonight with an absolutely exquisite interview, and I'm going to get to that in just a moment. But you know, I get so excited when Tuesdays come because I am gifted every week for just years with the best talent in the world that chooses and comes on willingly to share of their passion and their love and their expertise with you. And tonight is no different. So I'm just so thrilled to bring this young man on in a little bit, though. But, you know, we got a couple of things that we got to do first. And so here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show, we make it a point to acknowledge and give thanks to our ancestors, because our ancestors are always with us as we call upon them for their help and their guidance. And they're especially here with us on Tuesdays because we normally discuss issues that are not normally or ordinarily talked about in an open environment. You know, people may whisper about some of the subjects that we discuss here, but certainly not openly. So we know that the ancestors are holding us up. We stand on their shoulders for strength and perseverance and courage and boldness and all of that. And we trust that the ancestors got us. They got our backs, our fronts, our tops, and our bottoms. As we move forward, we just continue to give thanks to the many ancestors that have paved the way for us. So ancestors, those that we know by name and those that we don't, we just want to shout out, we love you, we love you, we love you now and forever. Ah, shame. Next thing we do is we anchor ourselves in affirmative reading. You know, sometimes we kind of hurry at the last minute and we got a little shakes about us. And we're not settled. So we're asking that we take this next couple of minutes and just kind of anchor ourselves in a good exhale so that we start this show tonight with a clear mind and a good energy. So I write a daily inspirational message, and you can find it at revsandy.wordpress.com. And this particular one is called I Remember. Today I remember who I am. I am amazing. I am incredible. I am abundantly gifted. I am prosperous. I am a unique being. I am a glorious spirit seeking to add beauty to all of life. I am filled with love and compassion, forgiveness and harmony, peace and justice, wisdom and understanding, clarity and discernment. I am a child of God. I am free. I am free to fully express who I am. I give myself permission to release the stranglehold of lack and limitation. I am gifted and wise. I am articulate and powerful. I remember I am amazing. And again, you can find that at RevSandy.wordpress.com. If you sign up, it will be delivered to your email address automatically every day. And when you arise, you can read whatever the message is for today. So it's all about life. It's all about love. And it's all about wellness. It is my distinct pleasure. I feel so gifted to have this young man with us tonight, Arthur J. Chianti, who is making his premier appearance to showcase and tell you about his extraordinary book. It is just absolutely amazing, a perfect read on some of the issues that we experience within our communities, again, that we don't normally talk about. And this is why he chose to write about mental health and mental wellness in our community. And the name of his book is called Dark Heart. He's gotten some exceptional reviews on Amazon. So we're going to bring him on in a very short time. But listeners, remember, I just want to share with you a couple of things. You're invited to join us in the discussion. You know, any questions, comments, concerns you may have that you want to ask, feel free to do that. And our call-in number is 516-531-9819. And you would just simply press 1 on the dial to let us know that you want to speak live on air with us. So in order for us to maintain a high quality on our playbacks, though, because we have several individuals that this is way past their bedtime, and so they listen to it at other times. And so once I open up your line, if you would just be very conscious of the background noise or put your phone on mute when you're not speaking, that would really help us out a great deal. So we appreciate that. You can listen to any or all of the shows, any of the rebroadcasts, at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sandy Rogers. That's SandyRogers. Got a little froggy in my throat, but that's all right. We're not gonna let that stop us either. So you're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And again, we're going to take us a quick music break. And then when we come back, we're going to bring on our featured author, Arthur J. Chianti. And just take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
Pound of pavement if I want to stay.
I got to pay it.
Yeah. Times is getting hard. Chip is on my shoulder. I'm playing it away.
Till then I take it.
You in the best that I can. Giving it all I got.
I just want to breathe. From behind the eight ball, I deserve a break.
Before I break it,
I wanna get away. Tell me where would I go? Cause it's day to day.
Has got me staying.
You're the best that I can.
That was Anthony, a.k.a. better known as Auntie Sandy's nephew. And so I am just so tickled to be able to play his music here on the show.
So now we're going
to
get
back
to
Life, Love, and Wellness, the
Sandy
Rogers Show.
It
is such a awesome honor to be able to have this author premiere his book on our radio show tonight. And so he is just fabulous. He's very articulate with what his points are that he wants to get across. And so the name of the book is called Dark Heart, and the author's name is Jay Chianti.
His
given name
is
Jesse
Smith,
and he's here to fulfill a promise that he made to his dad just before his dad committed suicide.
Well,
Jesse shines
a brilliant light
on his mental health in our communities.
And he does have a story to share with us, right?
You might be asking yourself, why is his father's death important?
Well, you'll find out as you listen to what this young man has to offer.
His compassion and passion oozes out from his heart.
You will feel a sense of oneness with him.
This is a discussion you do not want to miss. You may want to share it within your family, with your other close people in your network. But this is more common than what we want to recognize.
And I believe there's probably no family that's untouched.
So with just the utmost honor and respect, I bring to you Mr. Jay Chianti, the author of Dark Heart,
who is also known as Mr. Jesse Smith.
You with us, Jesse?
Yes. Hey, Sandy, how you doing?
I'm good.
How are you? I'm doing good. As good as I can be.
you know you're shining.
And it's always a pleasure to bring people in, especially
people of your caliber that has this raw, just magnetic energy that has written something that they're extremely proud of, and it serves several purposes. And I'm just excited that I had a chance to meet you a couple of months ago, or, yeah, I guess it was a couple of months, last month. I'm not sure when it was, but to have you to come on and tell us about your book and what prompted you to write this book and kind of tell us about your story, who you are.
Okay. First, I would like to say thank you for allowing me to be on your platform to talk about my book and tell my story. I've always loved the whole idea of mental wellness. I learned at a young age that clearing your thoughts, clearing your mind, clearing your soul of just all negativity allows you to, you know, shine brighter. My mom was, she's a psychology major. She's going to get her master's. And when I was a kid, I used to read all of her books. And the thing that stood out to me was Sigmund Freud, his concept on the conscious and subconscious mind. And from there, I took that and I just, you know, just learned a whole lot more about it. And it drove me to, you know, get a better understanding that you have to take care of your mind as well as your body and your soul.
That's awesome. I'm laughing, you know, because most young people particularly would not be picking up their parents' school books or, you know, their textbooks to read from them. And here you are at a young age reading thoughts that, you know, a lot of older adults don't even know about the principles and the thought patterns that Sigmund Freud talks about. So I'm impressed with how you even began with your learning process in this mental wellness arena. So that's incredible. So how old were you? Do you remember when you first were interested in what your mom was reading?
Oh, yeah. So I was probably in the 11th grade.
Okay.
My mom had a bookshelf, and it was right next to my bedroom. And, like, I never liked to read. Like, growing up, that was actually one of it was a punishment that I had when I think I was in the 5th grade. My dad made me just read for the whole Christmas break. So I despise reading. But I always took an interest in psychology, and she had the books there, so I opened them, and then I just started reading, and then I just didn't stop. You know, I just kept reading, and then I started taking psychology courses, and it's just my high school teacher, psychology teacher, her name was Miss Pike. She said, "One day I'm going to be calling you Dr. Smith," and I was like, "I'm not going to be a therapist or a psychologist or anything like that." But I think that was probably my calling, and it's probably something that I'll go into soon, hopefully. But that's something that I'm passionate about. Just the whole state of the mind.
Mm-hmm. But you never know. You may be Mr. Dr. Jesse Smith. I like that. You know, sometimes people give us those, they see more than what we see. And, you know, that doctor signifies a higher level of understanding the whole principles associated. So I can see that. I can see that, especially, you know, since you started in the 11th grade, what's that, about 16 years old, 16, 17 years old. So
yeah.
It sounds doable to me.
It definitely is. It's just a few more courses to take. Basically, I'm already almost there. I might as well keep pushing, right?
Exactly. That's what I would say. Because you enjoy it too, right?
100%. I actually like to look up studies and just read studies. I'm big on reading information. I can't just go off of, like, what somebody says. I have to do my own research. I have to make sense of what is going on. And one of the sayings that I like to say as far as when it comes to, like, your own creativity is, your creativity has to start somewhere. It is just like a seed that grows. You plant it, you water it, you have to nurture it. And once you get a better understanding of that creativity, that it manifests into something else. And with psychology, that's how your thoughts start. it starts like a seed, and then it grows into something incredible. And that's actually how I got into writing. Ninth grade, that was the first time I ever picked up a pen and a notebook. My ninth grade lit teacher, her name was Miss Hardison. It's crazy that I remember. It's only a select few of my teachers.
I don't remember. It's like one or two teachers, and I've been out of school a lot longer than you have.
I think it's only three or four that I remember, and those are the teachers that, you know, had an imprint on me. She gave me my first composition notebook. I actually still have that notebook, my ninth grade lit notebook. I keep every composition notebook that I've ever written in, and I have one for every year from the ninth grade up until now. I write through it, and then I'll get another one. But in that class, she would just give us topics, and from the topics, I would just write something, and then I would go back and read it. I would say that was very insightful, and that's actually how I learned to release things that were boggled up inside of me. That was how I learned to, that's how I learned to release mentally.
And that was, you said that was a practice that you started, the ninth grade, the 11th grade?
I started that practice in the ninth grade. That was, that's when I started writing. That's the beginning of, I guess, my writing career.
Okay. Oh, that's like 14, right? Ninth grade.
Yeah, I think it was ninth. It was like 2003, because I graduated 2007. So ninth grade, you got 4 years of high school. Ninth grade, what is it? 3 years of high school. 4 years.
I know, right? Well, I know that you. You start school at 5, so the 11th grade, that should make you 16, but, you know, sometimes it's a little bit more, sometimes it's a little bit less, so. But around that age, so we got it. I like how you made that comparison, that statement about our thoughts are like seeds. And, what we get as a result of what we're planning, you know, what kind of thoughts we're having as to what shows up in our world. Was that more learned from the reading of your mother's psychology books, or was that a thought that you summarize from your own continued research and documenting your thoughts in your books and things like that?
I think it's probably a combination of them all. I'm really heavy on anime. And what anime is, most people might think that it's just like cartoons or whatever. But there's a lot of that Asian culture crafted into the anime. So it's a lot of, being community oriented. There is a never give up spirit, never stifle away from your goals. So it's a combination of all of those things that helped me come to that conclusion, as well as growing up in the church. My grandfather was a pastor, and he instilled a lot of different teachings into me at an early age. He had his own church, and we were in church at least four times a week, like really just you know, learning the voice of God.
You there?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure if it's my phone. Go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that was a complete thought.
All right.
So here we go. We're going to do it this way. We don't allow technology to take us over. So.
Right.
So that anime that you were talking about, I actually had to stop and look that up.
What exactly is that?
So it's like different, I want to say cartoons, but they're not childlike cartoons. So they're like, they are cartoons. They're animated, animated series, and there's a lot of different ones out there that tell stories about whatever it is that they're talking about. It's you know how like you have all of these Marvel movies out. A lot of them are based off of like these cartoons. Like all of them are actually based off of these. Cartoons. Well, they're manga, comic books and stuff like that. So everything comes from that. So yeah, that's basically what it is.
Just
animation.
I don't really know how to
do.
Yes, animation.
Okay.
But it's different from like, so you got your Disney and your Pixar, but then those are completely different. Like those are for like children or young adults or adults. But then you have anime, which is just its own type of series in itself. But there's so many of them out there. It's like I'm just a big fan of them.
Because they're different.
Yes, they actually, so for me, I like to say that for me, anime is life because it allows you to explore like different realms of your mind. You know, you got different levels of creativity. Some might not get into the deeper realms of anime because it might be too creative for them, they can't follow it. But then you have places where you can just open your horizon and experience a new level of someone else's mind. So it's all different levels of mental wellness for me because like it's almost as if it's an escape.
Ah, okay.
And I apologize for the if you can hear that beeping noise. Apparently, the lightning struck the neighborhood, and it's been going on and off. Like it hasn't been doing anything for the last couple of hours, but it's beeping now. So
we don't allow technology to interfere with us, we just keep going.
So you really interest me with that anime.
And I can tell you something.
I have to give you something to watch.
Oh,
there's plenty of them out there.
Okay.
I think that would be quite interesting. Jesse, this is a whole different side of you that I didn't even know about.
And that's what I love doing, being able to get to know you along with everybody that's listening to the show. And not doing something that's pre-rehearsed or having questions that are already prepared and things like that. So
How did you get to the idea of wanting to write books?
You said you started writing journaling back in the ninth grade.
So I started out, it was like right after I graduated high school. And it was like my first year at college, and I was, you know, going on that journey of discovery, trying to find out who I was, what I was, what was going on, like how life was supposed to work. And I used to go to work and just sit in my car, and I would just kind of journal. And it started out with, like, raps. I would, like, write raps, and, like, I didn't want to be a rapper or anything like that, but me and my cousins and we would get in the car, listen to music, and just, like, freestyle or whatnot. And that manifested into writing poems. So I write tons of poetry. And in the poetry I write, I love telling stories. So as I'm telling stories, I started, you know, sharing a little bit. And people would, like, they would take a liking to it. They would comment, or I would read it to someone, and it would really resonate with them. So I moved to California, and I was out in California for a year back in 2008. And I started writing this story. And over the years, it completely changed and morphed into Dark Heart. But I shared it with a couple of my coworkers, and they was like, oh, my God, I love this. You got to write another chapter. So I was like, okay. So I wrote another chapter, and then I would share it with them, and they said, yeah, just keep going. And it took off from there. But then I left California and I lost that voice. So those people that were encouraging me and wanting me to continue writing, I lost contact with them. And I stopped writing. And then it became more so of poetry, more poetry. And I told myself I wanted to go back to creating that story. And by this time, I had lived like a couple of years. That's why this whole process took me 13 years to write. I was writing this book for 13 years. Mm-hmm. And over the course of my life, like just moving from L.A. to coming back to Georgia, these significant things that started happening in my life, going to Kennesaw State University, just meeting different people, a lot of the characters in my book may have been interactions or different concepts that I learned over a period of my life. And then in 2012, I was heavy on Naruto. That was one of the animes that I was telling you about. And I absolutely fell in love with that show. I watched it maybe 4 or 5 times. I'm actually rewatching it now. But just a combination of all of these things created Dark Heart. And the title, there was this game that I used to play when I was maybe 7 or 8. 9 or 10, something when I was younger. The name of the game was Heart of Darkness. And I took that and created Dark Heart. That's how I got my title. But then there's two books in the one book. So there's Fruit of the Earth. And what Fruit of the Earth represents is the people. The people that live in society, the people that are here on planet Earth, we are the fruit of the earth. And then the second half of the book is Fate of the World. And the fate of the world is in the hand of man. So when I got that concept, Adam and Eve became the essence of the book. The apple that Eve took a bite from and gave to Adam, it was in Adam's hand. So fruit of the earth and fate of the world was in the hands of man.
So
you just brought
your
whole family
into
this
writing
by
honoring
your grandfather
was
a pastor
and
your
mother's
Direction where she was going to college,
and
your love
writing,
of writing, and
bringing
in the
animes,
and
so
it's
all
of you
in
this
one
written publication.
100%.
Yeah,
I love it.
So now
we were also
talking
when
we
were at the
health
fair
a
few months ago
about
mental
health
in our community. I like to call it mental wellness because
we
need
to
talk
about it
in a more positive
term,
I believe, so that people are open and willing
to
have the discussion with you.
Now,
I have taken a few courses through
the
Georgia Mental
Health
Consumer
Network
and gotten a couple of certifications through them as a peer specialist, and it's been some years back.
But
it always helps to get
a
clearer
overall
picture of you know what's
exactly
going on within
our communities.
And I think that's one of the points
that
you made as well when we were talking on that first
time.
So let
me
just
get
a feel
from
you as to
your
thoughts
your
views on mental
wellness
within our community.
Okay. So I feel like we're both having like some technical problems because I keep hearing this little beeping from my building and you have an echo. So I'm just going to work with it. Let's see.
Okay, because I can go back to the other phone if I need to.
Okay. Can you ask me the question one more time?
All right.
Just the end of it. I
want to take this off because I had two lines open. So is this better? Is it clearer for you to hear this?
Yes.
Okay, great. I was talking about mental wellness in our community, and the reason why I like to use the terminology wellness is it does present a more positive aspect of the word so that, you know, something's wrong or something like that. So a choice that I make when talking about mental wellness in our communities. I have participated with the Georgia Mental Health Consumer Network, which is one of the largest mental wellness organizations in the state of Georgia, and I've taken some peer certification courses with them, and it's been quite a while back. But I just wanted to say that it's important for all of us to understand the holistic or the full dynamics of what's happening within our communities
So it's more than one part, and maybe you don't need to learn everything, but, you know, just as many various segments of the community life and the structure as possible. So recovery reaching recovery when there is a mental health breakdown is extremely important for a person to stay centered on that fact. And you have a very good, rounded concept around mental health and mental wellness in our community. And I wanted you to share your thoughts around your take on mental wellness in our community.
So I believe that in our community, it's taboo for us as men to show any type of emotion. And that's for lack of a better word, that's dumb. Because we are very emotional creatures. We are very emotional beings. Men and women are. A lot of times, men are more emotional than women. And we try to hold it in, or we don't try to. That's what we're taught. We're taught to tough it up because we're not gonna have, you know, someone to rescue us. No one's gonna help this man that's down and out. He has to pull himself up from his bootstraps. And that's one of the things that hold us as far as, you know, being well, because we feel like we have to carry the world on our shoulders. We feel like we have to make a dollar out of 15 cents every time. And it slowly deteriorates us on the inside when we can't open up and be one with who we are, with whether it's with the universe or with a physical form. Like, when we as men don't come into terms that it's okay to have emotions, it's okay to love our brother. It's okay to love our father. Our father's loving our sons. It's okay to have emotion of love. And in our community, that's taboo. Like, in our community, we always have to just be tough guys. And that's one of the last conversations that I had with my father. Like, it's okay to have emotion. Like, it's okay. You don't always have to be an OG all the time. You don't always have to just be so strong. It's okay. And that's one of the things that destroys us as a community. We're always trying to one up the other person because it's always this big macho testosterone contest, and that's not how it should be. We should be able to hug our brothers. We should be able to hug our fathers. We should be able to hug our friends without it being taboo.
Yeah, you're right. It's interesting. I have these conversations with men all the time, and so I'm really happy to hear you bringing up what you're bringing. And so I wanted to ask you a question. So when you talk about men portraying this strong character, is that where this, like, being hard and like this look on a man's face that is just almost unrecognizable because they're trying to be somebody that they're not, you know, but they want to be this hard cat, you know, like, man, look, I'm made of steel, nothing bothers me. Is that what you feel is the motive behind those looks?
I think it comes from a standpoint that in a archaic time, there was kill or be killed mentality. There is a I have to get, you got to get yours and I got to get mine mentality. And it goes further back to men are hunters. So men are hunters and women are nurturers. In a world of where we are hunting, or in a world where we have to go out and get what we need to survive, there is no room for us to be nurturers. So we tend to puff our chest up when we walk outside because I have to get a meal and the next man has to get a meal. So we have this hungry look when we go outside to where it's toxic.
Yeah.
And that toxicity that we carry on a daily, it comes back. It all comes back. It comes back as anger issues. A person that goes outside every day and they're the tough guy, sometimes they don't know how to turn it off when they get home. The person that goes out and they always have to fight. They always have to have quick comebacks. They always have to just portray this. Sometimes they don't know how to turn it off when they go home, and it seeps into everything that surrounds them. That whole look on their face, sometimes it doesn't go away because you get so caught up in portraying this person, then you invite the portrayal into the home. Because if I have to put on a mask for the person that I love, I can never take that mask off.
I like how you explain that. Yeah. So just stay angry all the time is the emotion that's most experienced, is what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, any one way of doing anything is not good. It's not healthy. It's not balanced. So I truly appreciate, because you really went deep, but Nation, I could feel your heart so involved in wanting to make sure that your answer was thorough and that it was complete and that it represented that male psyche, but also was said in a way that we're saying. And it made sense. It makes a lot of sense. Because sometimes I just, you know, I'll be wondering, like, why the face always got to be, you know, turned up like that and looking like that. And, you know, he ain't even like that, man. He's softer than that, you know. He loves his family, and he, you know, but the persona is just so different. So just curious, and thank you for sharing your insights on that. And how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I am 33.
33, okay. I had a young guest last week. I believe she was 20. She was 20-something, and she was a first-time author as well. So I'm excited to have you guys come on and let your voice be heard and share it with the world. So I really, really appreciate that. Now, when, you know, so you've been, oh, God, more than half your life you've been writing then.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So tell me, do you want to talk about the situation with your dad?
We can talk about it.
Okay. And for you listeners, I wanted to ask permission, because when we get real to the bottom of these issues that are, you know, a deep, deep part of who we are, it's always the best thing to ask for permission versus just going head off into asking questions of a person. That shows respect of the other person. And, you know, you're not just trying to go for sensationalism, but you really want to honor and respect the person that you're talking to. And that's the reason why I'm asking Jesse for approval for me to be able to go there. So thank you, Jesse. So at the close to the completion of Dark Heart, Jesse was having a conversation with his dad, and what I understand, and I'm not going to really, you know, try to get the whole story, but shortly after that conversation, Jesse's dad committed suicide. So you want to kind of take me or take us on the journey up to that point, and or whatever you would like to share with us in reference to the impact that it had on what we were just talking about, that tough guy persona, you know, men always being angry and not being able to share. What were the components that contributed to your dad's?
My dad was my dad was a strong minded man. He was always the best at what he did, and he lost his dad at a young age. He was a military man, world-class athlete, football, basketball, like everything that he did, he was just great at it. And I think that ended up being his downfall, because he wasn't great at love. He wasn't great at affection. He wasn't great at sharing his thoughts. He wasn't great at giving understandings of why he felt the way he felt. And he tried to hold it in, and he held it in. So we can go back to 2019. I went to visit him in Colorado. And he was with his common law wife, his wife. They had been together for about 15 years, and I sensed, you know, there was issues, trouble. They had trust issues for one another or whatnot, and they weren't really communicating well, to the point where when I went out there, his wife, Ursula, she would question me a lot about just like the things that they, that me and my dad were doing, as far as if we wanted to go to the casino or we wanted to just go out and have a drink together. Because I feel like in every man's life, him and his father should have, you know, should sit down, have a drink, and talk.
Okay.
Like two men on the same plane, on the same level, just two men talking as if, you know, they are equals or as if they are, there are no restrictions. Because sometimes when we talk to people that are, you know, younger than us, we give them, like, we stifle them and don't allow them to, you know, fully communicate, be completely open. So I feel like in every man's life, him and his son or two adults should be able to communicate on that level. Just have a conversation. So me and my dad, we really didn't get a chance to do that at that point. We did, but we didn't get a chance to do it to the point where it was, oh, I'm talking to my dad like we are, you know, this is not as if we are, not as if it's father and son, but we are talking like men. And I was there for like three, four days, and I left, come back, because it was a business trip. I went out there. The next time I saw my dad, Ursula had passed away. She had passed away. They had gotten to a disagreement, and she left. She had a stroke that same night, and maybe a week later, she passed. And
your dad did?
There was, no, his wife, Ursula, passed.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So there was just this pent-up level of emotion that resided in him that he never released. Like, he never let that pain, that learning experience, he never allowed it to manifest. And it slowly turned into decay inside of him. So he met someone else, and over the years of my life, I found that love is a very complicated ideology. Love can be mistakenly transferred. You can harbor such feelings for a concept or an idea and portray it or project it elsewhere. And I feel like that's what my dad did. He projected these emotions for Ursula into this other woman. after a year of, you know, well, it wasn't even a year. It was probably because I believe Ursula passed in January, and I can't remember the lady's name. Even if I did remember it, I don't think I would even, I don't even want to say it. But
right.
He met her, I think it was May, April, June, or something like that. And, well, he had already met her. And after Ursula passed away, they got together. They got together, and my dad would call me, and he would say, because I was working, I was selling cars, so he wanted me to help him find a car for them and all this other stuff. And, you know, I guess they were starting to become serious, and they were becoming more of a thing. And then the anniversary came for the passing of, you know, his wife. And, well, I came out there to see him for Ursula's passing and whatnot. I came out there, and he introduced me to everybody that was, you know, that he was working with. He introduced me to all of these different people. And I finally, like, got to sit and talk with them, and it was me and my sister. We were with my dad, and it just, I got to talk to him, and I got him to open up a little bit. He was still a hard shell. He didn't wanna talk about it. You know, I was like, "Are you okay?" Yeah, I'm fine. And then he had a lot of stuff going on with Ursula's kids. They blamed him, and it was just a lot of, you know, emotions to harbor, and he felt like he had to be strong, so he didn't want to unleash it. Felt like he had to be strong, so he met the other lady, and then the anniversary came. And it dawned on him. It became a lot. And, you know, I talked to him, and he would say that he was okay. And then February came, Valentine's Day, and the woman that he was with, She left him
on
Valentine's Day. She left him on Valentine's Day. And I believe from all of the information that I gathered, everything that I came together, I believe that he was wanting to propose to her. And she left him. And he took that harshly. He took that bad. And this, me and him had the last conversation that we had. And the last conversation, I sent him a picture, the cover of my book. And we had talked about, like, the unveiling of my book. We talked about, you know, I told him when I was out there the year prior, I told him that I wanted to publish 3 books. Dark Heart being my first, and then writing a children's book, and then the third book is a concept piece that I'm writing. So I told him that I'm going to publish 3 books next year. And what he said was, I can't wait to read them.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, you know, give him updates on the book itself. I'll give him updates. I would give him updates on my book. I'm sorry, this fire alarm keeps going off because the lightning struck the building or whatnot, so it just keeps going off. But
okay. Yeah, because your line was clear in the beginning, so let's just keep rolling it, yeah.
So I would give him updates. And the last conversation that we had, I sent him a copy of my, the cover of my book. And the company that I was working with, they just couldn't get it right. They just kept messing up. I wanted to have it published in January, and I was so upset. I was livid. So I send him a cover of the book, and I'm going off on a little rant, and he didn't respond. And I was so angry at him. I was like, why does he always have to be so short? Like, why isn't he messaging me back? And it completely broke my heart because he was dealing with all of this stuff, you know. I'm talking about myself being selfish, and he's dealing with this. He had a burden on his chest. He had a burden on his heart. He had a burden on his soul. And I'm talking about my book cover as if, you know, there's nothing else going on in the world. So he responded. He said, it looks good. It looks great. Like, this, it looks amazing, and I hope that the inside is a reflection of the outside.
Wow.
And to me, that wasn't enough. You know, I was still mad at him because he took too long to respond, and then he didn't give me enough. And again, like, looking back on it now, like, I was being selfish. And that's a burden that I have to carry. But I still have his words to keep pushing me forward.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I hope that it reflects the cover, the inside of it. And that was the last conversation we had. The day that I found out that he had died, my mom had actually called me. She was telling me that somebody was reaching out to her to get in contact with me, and my voicemail was my mailbox for my voicemail was full, and she was fussing at me, and she was saying, go delete some of that stuff so you can get these voicemails. So I go through my voicemail, and I'm just deleting messages in my voicemail, and I come across my dad's, and I started to delete one of them because he was fussing at me when I came to Colorado. He was fussing at me like, "Boy, you better answer your phone. I'm trying to pick you up from the airport." And I started to delete it. And I was like, no, I'm not going to delete this voicemail. And 30 minutes later, I get a call from my dad. And I was like, why is my dad calling me? He didn't really call me that often. It's usually me calling him. And I started not to answer the phone because I just felt it wasn't right. And then my girlfriend, she told me, she said, answer the phone. And when I answered it, it was the woman telling me that my dad took his life.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't believe it. That's not what we knew. That's not us. I didn't believe it. So it took me three, four days to get a plane, a flight to Colorado. And this whole experience is all sudden. I had spent majority of my money on trying to publish my book, getting to the editors. They every 5 seconds they're asking for more money for edit, something that they messed up, and they just kept prolonging the whole, you know, the whole publishing of my book. And I feel like had it not been for that, I would have published in January and my dad would have got a chance to, you know, I would have signed his copy. But so I fly out there, me and my older brother, we fly out there, and the whole process, it was one of the worst experiences of my life. Just everything, just rushing, just having to, I lost my wallet. I didn't have my driver's license, so I had to go with my Social Security card and my birth certificate. Just getting through, I think it's TSA, just getting through security and all of that stuff. Just trying to get the least expensive vehicle, the least expensive hotel, because we have to get my dad and fly him back to North Carolina. We have to get my dad, like, we have to just try to find out what happened. Because the woman, she's not trying to tell us, like, what happened. So we think that somebody has done something to my dad. So we get there. We get addresses of all of these things. We go to his job. We talk to people. It took about 3 days, 3-4 days to go through all of this. So we get there, and we wait for the last day to go to the house. So we go to the coroner. I can't really remember all the places that we had to go to, but it was a long process to try to secure his belongings, just to get all this stuff. And then we go to the house, and this is my dad's house. This is my dad's house, but there are people in the house. There are people in the house, and it's just trying to get my dad's stuff, like just trying to get in, just trying to get his phone, just trying to, just, you know, trying to understand, like, what happened, like, why my dad killed himself. And it just, like, we go in the house and we got five guys in the house with my dad's girlfriend just watching us. Like, it's their house. Like, we're intruding. And when it was all said and done, I found the answer that we came there for, and he really did it, and it hurt because it was in that same moment where I felt like I was being selfish. My dad I guess I discovered that I was more like him than I wanted to admit. And it just came to a point where it was just like, and you know, we're still dealing with all of this stuff today. It's not over. Well, it'll never be over. That's something that will always, you know, be with us. Me and my siblings,
sure.
All of us,
yeah.
we share this same emotion, the same feeling, and we're all trying to deal with it our own separate ways or whatnot.
Yeah.
When it comes to all of this, I decided to dedicate the book to my dad. I wrote him a letter, and it took me like a month to, you know, those seven pages that I dedicated the book to my dad. And for the most part, I feel like I wrote this book for my dad, even though I had written it way before he thought of, you know, taking his life.
Right.
I felt like I wrote it for him, and it was meant for him to read. Because it comes back to mental wellness. It comes back to being one with yourself and understanding that you are not alone here. You know, the people that are here with you are those that help pull you out of dark places.
Yes, yes.
So I felt like my dad left me his legacy. Like, he left me his name. And at first, you know, me and my brothers and my sisters, we didn't want nobody to know, you know, that this is what happened to our dad. You know, this is what happened. We didn't want anybody to know. But then I wanted to create a foundation for him. So I created a private foundation in his name called the Warner Ray Smith Jr. Foundation. And what I hoped to do with that was to tell his story and then extend ourselves out to help prevent, you know, someone else that feels like they're just in that dark place. And because to me, nobody deserves to feel like they are lost, feel like they are alone, feel like they have nobody. So I created the Warner Ray Smith Jr. Foundation, and with that, the WAS Initiative. And what the WAS Initiative is, the Wellness Against Suicide Initiative. So I hope to be able to help others that are dealing with issues of depression, issues of mental illnesses, like anything that they are feeling lost, feeling alone, feeling in a dark place. The website is pretty much done. I just have to publish it. It's thewood.co. That's the website. And on there is information about the Wanni Ray Smith Jr. Foundation. And, yeah.
Well, I thank you. And what was amazing about your commentary is that there was none of the beeping on your end. I don't think there was any static or whatever on my end. It was just a pure, pure conversation. And so I believe your father assisted us with making sure that your message was heard tonight. And I thank you so much for sharing that. It was quite brave, not tough, but brave and courageous of you to be able to go to that place and to talk and share so freely of the emotions and the experience that you had around your father's transition from this earthly plane. So thank you. We do have a caller that has been waiting for a couple of minutes now, but I hope she understands that, you know, your thoughts needed to go completed before I bring her on. So, questions, please.
Okay, I'm Eve from Texas, and you know what? Wow, Dad is powerful. wow, and look at you, of Dad, and the rest of the family, and look. Mom, and look what you learned from yourself, Mom and Dad. Dad is heavyweight to me. And you know what I like what Dad said? He said, you know, about the book, that he wants, what you've done, that's in the book, for it to be outside too. Look at Dad telling you, and telling all of us. I think Dad is so huge and so big till, you know, sometimes, and you're learning from yourself, from Mom, from Dad, sometimes we got to just chill. And when some things happen, we got to say, look at the strength. Come on, you know, and all respect and kindness and greatness to Dad, you and the family and everybody and me and everybody that here. This is super, super big. It's bigger than us. So I just want to get in there. And I like Dad. Kept on calling. And where you at so I could pick you up? And you didn't erase it. It's so much caring and love in Dad. Come on now. Dad loved a bunch of us, a bunch of people, a bunch of. Look at Dad. And wait a minute. What Dad did, you know what I say? Best to Dad and us, and bless Dad and us. Come on now. I see it, and look at you. You shared it. Get in here, says Dad. I dug it. You shared it. Mm-hmm. All this was for you, the family, me, and I'm telling you, I'm wide open with goodness and greatness. I think Dad is a champion. Hey, you, forgive me for my thoughts, because I mean the best. And I mean the best to you and us and all of us. And I was calling while you was talking, and I know you had to finish, but that's how much goodness and watch this and smoothness and relaxation that's coming all over the place from you, Dad, the family. I think you all sharp as a tack. And this is what I got, a lot of love. And watch this, I'm in like Flint. Hey, you, the best. I'm Eve, and I want you to catch it because I didn't caught it, and I think a lot of greatness. And look at you, for your mind to write, for your mind to tell, for your mind to talk. Do you know, like you said, I love it. You got it from Dad. Dad is a champ and not a champ son. Get out of here, champ and champions and the whole family. Come on now. And now you're making me feel even more and more and more better. And watch this, and taller. And watch this, and smarter and thoughtful. And watch this, and kind. And wait a minute, what about the strength? Wow, I got a hammer now. A lot of love. And hey, you know what? I want you to talk some more, and I want to read the book. Hey, I'm going to be calling back, and I'm going to sit on back and listen because I can't stop. That's how charged up you got me and us. All right? Hey, the best of the best of the best, and a lot of love. All right?
Thanks, Eve. And, you know, I told Jesse at the beginning that this show goes by very quickly. He didn't believe me, but we are out of time.
Oh, no.
So,
are we already?
I told you. So what I, in this last minute and a half that we have, I need for you to tell the audience how to get a copy of the book, how to contact you, give that website again, and any other information that you want to share with the listening audience, please.
Okay, so you can get the book from Amazon. You can type in J.Keonte, that's J.Keonte, or you can get autographed copies from me. You can send me a message on thewas.co@yahoo.com. The website is The Was Initiative. thewas.co. My Instagram is darkheart_jkeonte. You can message me on Instagram if you want copies. On Amazon, it's Dark Heart, J.Keonte. Yeah, that's it. Those are the places. You can contact me or get the book on Amazon.
Okay. And I prefer, make it easier on yourself, audience, but, you know, when you can go straight through the author, then there's no royalties that need to be split with anyone. And so that website is WAS, which stands for Wellness Against Suicide .co. So it's thewas.co. And again, for an email is thewas.co@yahoo.com. And Instagram, darkheart_. And was that Jesse? Or J.Keonte. Okay. So that's K-E-O-N-T-E. So I just want to make sure that we have all of those names. And otherwise, support him on Amazon. Support him wherever you need to. And, Jesse, it has been such a profound pleasure to have you to share so authentically with us and to be so real, so you, like Eve said, you lived up to your dad's legacy. You were able to articulate everything that he represented for you. And so I thank your mom and your dad and, everyone that had a part in your upbringing, and you have just been wonderful. And yes, we will have you back and finish up the discussion. And just thank you kindly for blessing us with your presence tonight.
I thank you for having me, and I also wanted to say that 10% of every book that is sold goes to the foundation.
Excellent.
That's how I'm funding the foundation.
Great.
So, yeah. And I thank you for allowing me to be on your platform to tell my story and to talk about my book and to tell my dad's story.
Yes, yes. Well, continued blessings in life. And, we'll have you back. We'll have you back hopefully before the second book is published, but to get an update with you. And so thank you again, everybody, for listening in. Thank you, Jesse Smith, author Jay Keontae, for making a discussion around the dark heart or mental wellness within our communities. And so we are a few minutes over. So I'm going to say good night and thank you for being with us. And we'll be back next week, same time, different speaker. We love you. We bless you. And we wish you well. All righty. See you next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.